Oh, you know what? All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first, I just want to take the opportunity to thank the Shir for the beautiful Chanukah gift. Thank you very much for all those who participated. I will tell you that it's a true zechus, it's a true privilege to be able to learn Torah with each of you every single week. It's a true privilege to be able to learn with all of you each and every week. It really is. As I'd say, this year is a highlight of my week. But Baruch Hashem, every shir is a highlight of my week. But certainly getting the opportunity to study the particular week's parsha in depth, with intensity, with life meaning, is a true privilege. And the truth is, all of you enable me to have it. So thank you, and Amiras Hashem, we shall be zocha to learn Torah together for many years to come. Amen. All right, so we begin with Parshas Vayechi. So if you look in number one, what I want to show you is a couple of different psukim within the parsha. All that speak about what I think is one of the most riveting episodes. Yaakov, we remember Parshas Vayechi. There's a lot that happens very quickly in the scope of the Parshios of Vayigash and Vayechi. We go ultimately from Yosef really threatening his brothers to the revelation, Yaakov Avinu relocating, resettling the entire family, and then ultimately Yaakov Avinu dying. Yaakov Avinu, and not just Yaakov Avinu dying, but ultimately the Shvatim, by the time we get to the end of Parshas Vayechi, that entire generation has already died out. Remember, from Vayechi to Shemos, already some significant amount of time has already elapsed, and Jewish servitude already begins in Egypt. But perhaps one of the most dramatic episodes is number one. Va'atoshnei banacha noldim l'cha be'eretz Mitzrayim, ad boli eilech Mitzrayim alihem, Ephraim u'menashe, kiruvein v'shimon yiyuli. So remember again, the message goes out to Yosef, that hinei avicha chola, your father is very ill. Yaakov Avinu summons his son to his bedside, and Yosef comes with his own sons, Ephraim and Menashe. And here, Yaakov Avinu makes a very startling revelation. He tells Yosef that Yosef's two sons, Ephraim and Menashe, will be reckoned in the eyes of Yaakov Avinu as his own two sons, which of course is very dramatic, because here we have Yaakov Avinu essentially saying that Ephraim and Menashe will be treated like Shvatim. U'molaretcha asher alarta acharei mlecha yehiyu, Hashem acheihem yikaru b'nachal asam. But your children, if you beget any after them, shall be yours by their brothers' names, shall they be called in their inheritance. So then Yaakov Avinu simply tells Yosef that, remember again, this special dispensation is only afforded to your two sons, Ephraim and Menashe, but anyone else, any other subsequent children that you will have, will ultimately fall under the umbrella of Ephraim and Menashe. Number two, again, I'm just giving you the psukim in straight progression. I just broke them up for illustration purposes. And when I was coming from Padan Aram, from the house of Lavan, Rachel died, Be'eretz Kinaan, Baderech Ba'od Kivras Eretz Lava Efrasa, Vek Bereha Sham Baderech Efras, Ki Beis Lachem El, and Yosef, your mother, died on the way right when I came back into Kinaan. She died in the middle of the journey, and I buried her by the roadside in the middle of nowhere. Number three. Vaykach Yosef es shnehem, es Ephraim b'mino mismol Yisrael, ves Menashe b'smolo mimin Yisrael, vayigash elav. So now again, Yaakov Avinu wants to bless Yosef's two sons. So what does Yosef do? Yosef takes Menashe, who is the Bechor. He's lined up with Yaakov's right side, Ephraim, who is the younger son, with Yaakov's left side. And what happens? Vayishlach Yisrael es simino, Vayoshes arosh Ephraim huat zair, ve'es smolo arosh Menashe, sikel es yadav ki Menashe habachor. And then something dramatic happens. Yaakov Avinu switches his hands. He switches his hands and he puts the right hand, which is the important hand, the hand of dominance, on the hand ultimately of Ephraim, who is the younger child, and his left hand, which represents, we'll call it a weaker bracha, on the hand, on the head of Menashe, who was the biological Bechor. Number four, Vayar Yosef Kiyoshis Aviv Yad Mino Arosh Ephraim Vayera Be'enov. So this is also a very, this pasuk could be a shir by itself. Yosef sees this, but the Torah uses a very strong word, Vayera Be'enov. Ultimately, Vayera, it was bad in his eyes. And he does something quite amazing. Vayitmoch Yad Aviv Lahasir Oso Me'al Rosh Ephraim Arosh Menashe. And he does something that, truth is, in biblical times, children would not do. What did he do? He lifted up his father's hands. He lifted up his father's hands. You know, in certain cultures, it was considered disrespectful for a child to even touch a parent. So here, certainly, again, to go out of your way to actively manipulate the parent's hands, this was unheard of. But Yosef, but again, what's happening over here? If you're Yosef, what do you see unfolding right in front of you? The same thing that caused incredible dissent between you and your brothers. He sees Yaakov, his father, favoring the younger grandson over the older grandson. Vayera, this is bad in the eyes of Yosef. We've spent the last couple of psukim, couple of prakim, trying to repair the incredible rifts within the family. Father, you're about to create another. Please don't do it. What happens? Vayomer Yosef al aviv lo kein avi. Father, it's wrong. So now, again, so there are three things. Number one, it was bad in Yosef's eyes. Number two, Yosef goes to actively move his father's hands. And number three, Yosef tells his father, Father, this is not the right thing to do. Put your right hand on the Bechor. Vayima'ein aviv vayomer. Yadati b'ni yadati. I know my son. I know what I'm doing. I might be old. But I have clarity of vision in terms of who, which bracha I'm giving to. Gam hu yelam, v'gam hu yigdal, v'ulam achiv hakaton yigdal mimenu, v'zaro yihyem elo advoyim. And here, Yaakov Avinu tells Yosef prophetically, both of your sons will be great. But at the end of the day, your younger son, Ephraim, will eclipse his older brother, Menashe. V'yivarchim b'yom ahu leymar, v'cha yivarech Yisrael leymar, yisimcha elokim, so again, after this whole episode plays out, so what happens? Yaakov blesses Ephraim and Menashe. And what's interesting is, the blessing he gives Ephraim and Menashe is what? That for all future generations, people, with you, the Jewish people, will bless their own offspring. And they will say that Hashem should make you like Ephraim and Menashe, Vayosem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe. And Yaakov Avinu indeed carried through on his initial intent, and he placed Ephraim, both physically using his right hand, as well as verbally in the text of the bracha, he put Ephraim before Menashe. Rashi comments in number five, B'cho yivarech Yisrael. What does that mean? That you, the Jewish people, will bless. Habot levarech es bana. If one wants to bless his sons, yivarechim bevirchasam. You should bless them using this bracha. V'yomer ish libno. Yisimcha Elokim. So this becomes the verbiage. This becomes the verbiage for the brachos that we give to our children to this very day. Just before we go on, I just want to thank Label and Chaya Cooper for sponsoring tonight's shir in the merit of a refuah shlema for Shoshana Bas Menucha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she will have a complete and enduring refuah.
Amen.
So we have a couple of questions when dealing with this particular section. Question number one is really based number two. Question number one is related to source number two, which is, why in the middle of this discussion does Yaakov Avinu bring up Rachel? Now, remember again, let's leave aside what happened earlier. Why does he bring up Rachel Imenu in the midst of this entire thing? Remember, Yaakov is dialoguing with Yosef about Yosef's sons, right? Ultimately, he's just told Yosef that Ephraim and Menashe will be like Reuven and Shimon. Rachel Imenu, her life or her death, have absolutely nothing to do with the matter at hand. So question number one is, why does Yaakov Avinu feel the need to insert Rachel Imenu, particularly Rachel Imenu's death, in the midst of this conversation? Question number two, which is actually, we asked this same question last year. We studied this section last year. This year we're going in a different direction. But this question always bothers me every single year when we read these psukim, which is that if you were to ask me if we were going to bless our children and we were going to go ahead and use certain role models. So for example, how do we bless our daughters? How do we bless our daughters? Yisimech Elokim Kisara Rivka Rachel Leh. Now that's a bracha. That's a bracha. The matriarchs, right? The paradigms of Jewish femininity, what it means to ultimately be an Akeras Habayis, a stronghold, the foundation of a home. I understand when I give my daughters that bracha, I understand when I'm Sita, I want them to be matriarchal in nature. But yet, when we bless our sons, we say they should be like Ephraim and Menashe. Now, if I were to ask you, three of the greatest accomplishments of Ephraim and Menashe, what would they be? It would be, I don't know. Right? Because the truth is, again, at the end of the day, Ephraim and Menashe, we would not usually reckon them, we would not usually count them as the more influential figures in Chumash Bereishis. Or for that matter, yes, they do have some very famous descendants. Remember, Yehoshua comes from Ephraim. Gidon comes from Menashe. So there are certainly great people they have from the tribes. But guess what? There are great people that come from all of the tribes. Right? So what is it? So obviously, Yaakov Avinu is saying something very dramatic. He's saying, number one, he's saying that, first of all, I'm blessing your son. So the fact that he counts Ephraim and Menashe like Reuven and Shimon, that's not such a chiddush. That's not so novel to us. Why? Because what was he essentially giving Yosef? Pishnayim. He was giving him a double portion. Why? Who gets a double portion normally? The Bechor. Yosef was a Bechor. Yosef was a Bechor for his mother. He was the Bechor of Rachel Imenu. And so essentially, and remember, especially given the fact that Reuven, to a certain degree, lost his firstborn status. Why did he lose his firstborn status? Number one, because of the whole episode with Bilhah, right? And number two, because Reuven had an opportunity to prevent the sale of Yosef. And he did not exercise his familial authority. Remember, it was Reuven who said, don't kill him, just throw him in the pit. So the brothers would have listened to Reuven. And the Torah tells us Reuven's intention was to save his younger brother. Reuven should have exercised some more authority and said to his brothers, we're not doing this. But he didn't. And so because of that, Reuven himself has already lost his Bechor. So it's natural to say, Yosef, you are now the Bechor. How do we exercise Pishnayim, double portion? What would have normally been one tribe of Yosef now doubles in size and becomes the tribes of Ephraim and Menashe. But to say that what now Ephraim and Menashe themselves become the paradigm of Judaic accomplishment, that whenever we bless our sons, we say that you should be not like Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, not like Moshe, Aaron, David, and Shlomo, not like anyone else, but who? But who like Ephraim and Menashe? So the question is, why? What was so unique about Ephraim and Menashe that makes them the paradigm of Judaic accomplishment that essentially we see to our children? If you want to be successful in life, emulate Menashe and Ephraim. So these are two questions we're going to try to focus on tonight. Again, why bring up the death of Rachel Imenu when it has nothing to do with the conversation? And number two, why Ephraim and Menashe, out of all the biblical figures we have to model ourselves after, why do Ephraim and Menashe become the role models that we urge our children to emulate? So there are a number of different answers to this. The first, I'll give you first a couple of, simpler answers. If you take a look at number six, I quoted to you here from a sefer called Igra Dekalo. The sefer Igra Dekalo was written by Rav Tzvi Elimelech Shapira of Dinov. So the Rebbe of Dinov was the founder, really, of the Munkach dynasty. So there's still a Dinov Rebbe. There's still a Hasidus of Dinov. But Dinov ultimately founded Munkach. So Rav Tzvi Elimelech Shapira was one of the great Hasidic masters, lives from 1783 to 1841, and he writes the following. He says, and this is probably one of the more well-known approaches, V'lamu yisparuchu b'nei Yisrael dafka v'hem v'lo b'shar ha'shvatim. So he asks our question, or we ask his question. That is, why do we bless our children that they should be like Menashe and Ephraim? Why them and no one else? Yisod choshuv b'musra ha'yadus. If there's one thing we know that's important in Judaism, it's that you have to be able to maintain proper personal interactions. You know, there's a mission of us, Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa says, Kol sheruach habrios noche imenu, right? Ruach hamokom noche imenu. You know, it's an amazing idea. Literally, anyone who gets along with other people, that means that God likes you. If you can't get along with people, God doesn't like you either. Right? So in other words, what Rabbi Hanina Mendoza is saying is people don't like you, God doesn't like you. People do like you, God likes you. What does that mean? That in Judaism, there's an understanding that you have to know how to be a normal social person. And if you can't be a normal social person and know how to interact with others, chances are you're going to be deficient in your relationship with God as well. So says the Rebbe the following idea, that if there's one important principle in Judaism, it's that we don't lord over others, meaning if I have something that you don't, I don't go ahead and use that as a way of putting myself over you. And furthermore, we're not jealous of each other. We rejoice in each other's accomplishments. Kishe Yaakov ra'a, ki afa pi shebicher es Ephraim hatzar lefnei Menashe habachar, b'cholzos lo hiskar Ephraim al Menashe, u'menashe lo niskar Ephraim. So says the Din of Rebbe, Yaakov Avinu sees something amazing in his grandsons. What happens? Remember, the dramatic shift. The Bechor becomes the less important, and the Katan, the younger one, becomes the more important. And yet, what did Yaakov Avinu observe? Ephraim did not in any way lord over or rub this in his brothers, which of course you have to understand, for a little brother, right, to be elevated to a higher stature and not to somehow remind his older brother, because I'm sure they were brothers like most brothers, and I'm sure there was rivalry through growing up, and here you have the younger one eclipsing the older one, and yet what? Ephraim doesn't say anything. Ephraim does not say anything that would make his older brother feel bad. Not only that, but Menashe, who is now the Bechor, who essentially was relegated to a second-tier status, is not what? Is not jealous of his younger brother. Yaakov Avinu is blown away by the midos of his grandsons. He can't believe the fact that the younger brother is not gloating over his newfound greatness and that the older brother is not jealous of his lost Bechora. And at that moment, Amar Yaakov, Halevai, v'chol b'nei Yisrael yihiyu kacha, mishulole gava v'kina. And Yaakov Avinu is so taken by this that he says, Halevai, this is the way Jews are supposed to act. That Jews are not jealous of each other and Jews do not lord over each other. Vayosem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe, hu eifa perish habracha, yisimcha elokim ke'efraim u'menechem Menashe. Lochein yisparchu yisrael dafka bohem, shekimohem lo tiyakina v'tachrus shoreres b'nehem, v'davarze lo hayashchiach eitzel yeser achim. So the Rebbe of Dina makes an amazing observation. If you remember again, going back a couple of parashios, when Yosef goes ahead and tells over his dreams, which foretold future greatness, what was the reaction of the brothers? Vayikanu bo echav. Right? Actually, it says two things. They were jealous of him, and they hated him. Right? So again, when Yosef, the little brother, has these visions of grandeur, the other brothers aren't supportive. The other brothers aren't excited. The other brothers aren't happy. They're angry and they're jealous. And when Yaakov Avinu sees the sons of this very young man who was so mistreated by his brothers, and yet there's so much brotherly harmony between them. Remember, it's easy to get along when things are status quo. This was a tremendous upset of the equilibrium. Older brother becomes less important. Younger brother becomes more important. And yet, the brothers are still able to coexist harmoniously? Yaakov Avinu says, yes, this is the pinnacle of Judaic accomplishment. To be able to get along with the other, even if the other has more, and to be able not to look down on the other, even if I have more. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu says, this is ultimately what we hope for our children, which is such an amazing insight. The bracha we give our children is not that you should be great Talmid Chachamim, is not that you should learn a lot, is not that you should do a lot of mitzvot. Those are all important things also. But the real bracha we give our children is, you should know how to get along with each other. The real bracha a parent wants for their children is, you should know how to interact with each other. Even if one of you accomplishes and one does not, even if one of you grows and one of you regresses, no matter what happens to you in life, you should always be able to maintain and to forge a love, a bond of love, a bond of togetherness, and a bond of mutual respect. An amazing idea, says the Rebbe. If you look at number 7, Does Naim LaTorah says, this is Rav Suratskin. So Rav Suratskin writes the following. He says, Ro'a es Ephraim u'Menashe. So what does Yaakov Avinu see? He sees his two grandsons, Ephraim u'Menashe. B'nei ha-mishna le-melech Mitzrayim. Now remember, yeah, we'd have to imagine that Ephraim and Menashe probably had a lot of, for lack of a better word, a lot of protexia, right? Their father, of course, is the viceroy in Egypt. Remember, even though he's second in command to Paro, in certain respects, he's even more powerful than Paro. And yet, Asher Kolei Chole Hamad the Pesuchim Lefnehem, V'cha Mishros Memshala Penuyos Padam. Now remember, Ephraim and Menashe, they could write their own ticket. All the doors were open to them. Whatever they wanted to do, whatever they wanted to be, whatever they wanted to accomplish, all the doors were open. And yet, furthermore, we have to imagine, for Shiduchim, right, who would not want to marry these two young men? But yet, amazingly enough, and it's such a beautiful picture, how did Ephraim and Menashe spend their days? They went every day to learn with their Zayda. They went every day to learn with their grandfather in Goshen. Rav Sorotzkin writes, Begeto HaYehudi. Right? What was Goshen? Right? So Goshen was the Jewish quarter of Egypt. Right? Goshen was the Jewish ghetto. So every single day, they left all the trappings of royalty. They left all the other opportunities they had at their disposal. And what did they do? They went to learn Torah with their grandfather. And what didn't they do? They never became indifferent to their people. You know, if there's one thing that young people want more than anything, it's what? To fit in. People want to fit in. People don't really, I guess it's older people also. Everybody, when you get older, you get a little bit more self-assured in your identity. So you don't necessarily have to feel like you have to fit in. But certainly when you're young, you're trying to find your place, you want to fit in. So at the end of the day, yes, their whole extended family is here, but they're still a minority in Egypt. We would have thought Ephraim and Menashe would have wanted anything just to fit into general Egypt, but yet they never remained indifferent to their people. Every single day they went to learn Torah with their grandfather. Every single day they identified as a member of the Abrahamic family. Listen to this. V'kasher nigzera avodas parach alacheihem. Hey mitztarfim el tsaras v'sava klal Yisrael. Ve'enam holchim el ha-mitzrayim, name our paragraph B. Anachnu novadlu b'mitzrayim. Va'avinu ha-mishnu l'melech hitzila se'aretz mirah v'heshir osa. Ulefichach magios lanu privilegiot. Privileges. Elo hey mekablim aleim es ol ha-golos. Va'ashibod yachim achen. So this is amazing. This obviously after Yaakov Avinu dies already. But something amazing happens. Remember, after Yaakov dies, really more appropriately, after all the Shvatim, after Yosef dies, that's when servitude begins. Ephraim and Menashe entered had the yoke of slavery just like their cousins. Now, they could have very easily have gotten themselves out of it, or at least they could have appealed it. They could have said, listen, our father is Yosef. He saved you guys, even though he's dead now, but he saved you. He saved Egypt. He saved the region. He saved a large part of humanity, of civilization. Give us a pass on this, but they didn't. Instead, they identified with the plight of the Jewish people. They identified with the reality of being a member of Klal Yisrael. They never tried to exempt themselves of the circumstances that marked the existence of their brethren. They identified with their people, despite the fact that what? That they could have very easily had an out. They could have very easily had a much easier life, a much more privileged life. But from the moment that Yaakov Avinu resettled in Canaan, Ephraim and Menashe re-energized their bond with the Abrahamic family. He goes on, Az Amar Yaakov, Halavai Sheyikhu Bnei Yisrael Mofes, Es Bnei Yosef, Shenoldu Ben Mitzrayim Kibnei Malachim, Es Misiro Samla Amam Vesoroso, So therefore, Yaakov Avinu says, Ephraim and Menashe become a paradigm for what? A paradigm for commitment to Klal Yisrael. What it means to identify as a Jew. It's not easy to identify as a Jew. Identifying as a Jew comes with incredible, incredible baggage. But for those who understand, it also comes with exceptional, unrivaled, unparalleled privilege. Ephraim and Menashe understood this. They were proud of who they were. And even though, again, they had alternatives, they had options, they actively chose to identify with the Abrahamic family. And therefore, says Rav Sorotzkin, this was the bracha of Yaakov Avinu. Becha yivarech Yisrael le'mor yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim uche'Menashe. The bracha that we say to our children for all future generations is what? You should always have the inner strength to identify with your people. Always have the inner strength to identify with your nation. Always have the inner strength to identify with your God. It's not always easy. Sometimes the world will reject you because of it. And sometimes you may think that it's easier to fit in if you disassociate from your national family. Yaakov Avinu says, we have to be like Ephraim and Menashe. They had the strength to identify as members of Klal Yisrael, even though, again, for them it meant giving up certain privilege, even though for them it meant assuming the yoke of servitude and the yoke of hardship. That's the same level of backbone, of national backbone, that we should each exhibit, and the same level of commitment to the people that we try to endow and give over to our children. Okay, those are the first two approaches. So again, we have Ravtzi Elimelech of Dinov in his Sefer Igret Dekalo explaining that the bracha is really focused on Ephraim and Menashe in their midos. And so we bless our children saying, you should have the midos of Ephraim and Menashe. Which again is such an amazing lesson, that what do we want most for our children? Again, I get very excited about this because I think it's amazing. It tells you, you know, everyone always wonders, like, what do I want to give to my children? What's the most important lesson to give over to my children? And the truth is, it becomes somewhat trite and somewhat cliche, but says the Rebbe of Dinov, you know what the most important thing is? You have to be a mensch. You have to be a mensch. You have to know how to interact with others. There will be others in life who have more than you. Don't be jealous. Rejoice for them. There'll be times when you will have more than others. Don't use that to lord over others, but instead use it to help. Use it ultimately to reach out. That's what we want more than anything for our children. Does Naim Torah, what do you want more for our children than anything else is what? Be proud to identify as a Jew. Not because it's easy, not because people are going to love you, not because the world is going to accept you, but be proud to identify as a Jew, because it is an incredible source of pride to be a member of the Abrahamic family. And now we come to our third approach for the evening, which we're going to spend the remainder of our time on tonight. The Targum Yonasan, and this is quite amazing, the Targum Yonasan, like Targum Onkelos, is an Aramaic commentary. You can see a little bit of a biography of who Yonasan ben Uzziel was. So remember, often we think that the Targum Yonasan or Targum Onkelos are just translations. They're not translations, they're commentaries. Which is why, again, you know, once upon a time, Aramaic was the vernacular. So actually, these commentaries were easier for the common man than Rashi, Rashi was later on, but then some of the other Mepharshim that we relate to. For us, obviously, these become a little bit more complicated because most of us are not very well versed in Aramaic. But look what the Targum Yonasan writes, number 8. Now, just so you understand, this is the Targum Yonasan commenting on, this would be source number 4, Pasuk Chof, Pasuk 20. So what does the Pasuk say? So Yaakov Avinu blessed them on that day, saying, Bicha Yosef Brei Yivarachun Beis Yisrael Yasinuka. So the Targum Yonasan says, how does he translate the Pasuk? See, remember, before I translate it, the Pasuk that we had in number 4 said that Yaakov Avinu blessed them on that day, saying, Bicha, through you, the Jewish people will bless their children, saying, God should make you like Ephraim and Menashe. The Targum Yonasan says, the way to understand the Pasuk is, Yaakov said to Yosef, that Yosef, through you, my son, the people will bless their children. Bicha Yosef Berei, Yivarchun Beis. See what Targum Yonasan is saying? We don't bless our children to be like Ephraim and Menashe. Who do we bless our children to be like?
Yosef.
To be like Yosef. Which is interesting, with only one problem, which is, right? It's not what the Pasuk says. So just a small detail, right? The Pasuk itself says quite explicitly that Yaakov Avinu is saying that the Jewish people will bless their children to be like Ephraim and Menashe. So what does the Targum Yonasan mean when he says, no, what Yaakov Avinu was actually saying is, Yosef, for all future generations, people will bless their children to be like you, to be like Yosef. So how do we understand this Targum Yonasan? So what's interesting is the following. Look at number 9. So now we could begin, remember our first question we asked, which was, why does Yaakov Avinu include the sudden death and burial of Rachel in the middle of this interaction? So look at Rashi. So Rashi highlights over here, Bek Beresh. Remember, Yaakov Avinu essentially says, Rachel Imenu died in the middle of nowhere, and I buried her in the middle of nowhere. You know, today, Kevar Rachel is a destination. But you know, even if you look at the old drawings, the old paintings of Kevar Rachel, so where is Kevar Rachel? right? In the middle of nowhere, right? You see like hills and hills in the background. So what's interesting is the following. So why is this here? Why is so? Look what Rashi says. Vek barasham v'lo holy chasa v'lo helechtiha afilu beis lechem la'achnis al aretz. Remember, there is a city nearby. It's the city of Beis Lechem, the city of Bethlehem. So Yaakov was saying, listen, I could have taken her into Beis Lechem, but I didn't. V'yadati sheyesh belibcha alai taroma. So now Rashi says something amazing. Rashi says that Yaakov says to Yosef, I know that you're angry at me. Now, how does Yaakov know that Yosef is angry at him? The answer is he doesn't. Yaakov Avinu is making an assumption that Yosef is upset at him. He's making an assumption that Yosef probably feels that his mother got the raw end of the deal. Here, Leah Imenu, who wasn't even the chosen wife of Yaakov, merited burial in Ma'aras HaMachpelah, right? And her husband's going to be next to her. And my mother, Rachel, who was the wife that she wanted, is buried mamish in the middle of nowhere. So Yaakov Avinu says, you know, Yosef, I figure you're probably upset at me. I figure you're probably, maybe upset is the wrong word. Sheish b'lev chalai taromis means literally that you have a complaint. You have a taina. You have a complaint against me. But let me tell you something. Avadolecha sha'apia dibor kavarti hasham. But just know Yosef, that everything was done with precision planning. I purposely buried her there. Why would I purposely bury her in the middle of nowhere? Shetehe la'azor la'ezra libanha. Kishigla osam nevudzaran vahayu ovrim derech sham yotzesa rachel al kivra uboche umevakish alehem rachamim shneemar kol beraman ishma rachel mevaka abanehu vakodesh baruch hu meshiva yesh schar lepulasech neumashem v'shavu banim ligvula. So Rashi Hakadosh quotes an amazing idea. Rashi says to you, Yaakov says to Yosef, to you this was like the middle of nowhere, but you know, in a couple of years from now, couple of generations from now, that nowhere is going to become a very significant somewhere. Why? Because when the Jews are exiled by Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar was the Rabat Habachim, was the chief butcher of Nebuchadnezzar. He was a brutal, brutal man. We read about him in the Kinos on Tisha B'Av. We read about how the fact that Nebuchadnezzar had a particular affinity to brutalizing children, that Nebuchadnezzar would take the heads of babies and cry. And he was a brutal, brutal man. Nebuchadnezzar, when he was exiling us out of Eretz Yisrael, amazingly enough, the path that we took passed by where? Passed by the grave of Rachel Imenu. And the Navi Yirmiyahu writes that Rachel Imenu comes out, she emerges from her grave, and she cries out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rachel Mevaka Abanel, and it's the cries of Rachel that move HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, remember, the Medrash, it's called the Medrash in Eicha. And Medrash in Eicha says, everyone else davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Moshe, and Leah, everybody, no one else can move God. Rachel Imenu moves God. She moves God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Yesh Tzchar Lepul HaSeich, your efforts will yield fruit. V'shavu, I will bring your children back. So Yaakov Avinu, according to Rashi, says to Yosef, I know you're upset at me. Or at least I think you're upset at me. But let me explain to you, your mother is not buried in the middle of nowhere. Right now, it's in the middle of nowhere. But just in a couple of generations from now, it's going to become a very significant somewhere. She is going to be there for her children. So this is Rashi's approach. This Sfarno takes a totally different approach. And the Sfarno writes in number 10, he says, Ba'od kibras arz lavo efrasa. Listen what the Sfarno writes. Tekif kishen asasi mi osamokum shahaya shahaya dvar akel yisparach elai. Ba'odi baderech terem higi'i lebeis lechem. Vek berar sham baderech efrat. I buried her in the middle. I buried her in the middle of nowhere. On the way to Efrat. Why? Look what the Sfarno says. V'kol kach gavra alai tirdasi. I was so overwhelmed. I was so overwhelmed by the enormity of my circumstances. I was so overwhelmed by my pain. Shelo atzarti koach lo licha lebeisak varos beis lechem. So the Sfarno says, Yaakovina says to Yosef, you have to understand, Yosef, when your mother died, I was paralyzed. When your mother died, I did not know what to do. I was sapped of all of my strength. And I didn't even have the koach to take her to a proper place for burial. I just buried her right on the spot. So you see the distinction over here? According to Rashi, Yaakov Avinu's choice to bury Rachel Imenu in the middle of nowhere was a strategic national decision. According to this, and remember, Nobody disagrees with the fact that ultimately the Jews are exiled walking by Kever Rachel. But the question is, was that pre-planned or was that just happened the way it worked out? So according to the Sfarnov, there is no pre-planning over here. There's no strategic national decision. Yaakovinu says to Yosef, you have to understand, I did not expect to lose the love of my life. I did not expect to lose my bride. I remember, if you're Yaakov Avinu, the tragedy of the death of Rachel Imenu is tragic on many levels. It's tragic because she was young. It's tragic because she died in the midst of childbirth. And it's tragic because it occurred right at the beginning of their real life together. Remember again, Rachel Imenu dies pretty much right when they leave Laban's home. So right when they come back to Eretz Canaan, and they have the opportunity to raise their children together, the opportunity to build a family together, Rachel's gone. See, Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, you have to understand something. I was a broken man. I couldn't act. I couldn't do. People deal with grief differently. Some people are able to keep their head about them and they do what they need to do. And some people shut down. Yaakov Avinu says, I shut down. I shut down. I was overwhelmed by my circumstances and I could not act. And he says, Ve'in Safek, listen to this, it goes on. Ve'in Safek, ki me'az haya libi chalal bikirbi. And the truth is, Yosef, I have to tell you, I was never the same afterwards. Libi chalal bikirbi means I was a shell of a man after the death of your mother. Velo shalat od bi yitzahara, v'nechlasha ta'avasi, velo nishar bikoach laholid banim. And this is amazing. He says, you know what? He says, when I lost your mother, I even lost the desire for intimacy. I just wanted to be with your mother. I didn't want to be with anyone else. And when your mother was gone, the truth is, I didn't even have a desire to try to have more children. Now, why is this important? Because first of all, just what's happening over here is a total aside. Now we begin to understand why ultimately, another reason, why Menashe and Ephraim are reckoned as the sons of Yaakov. Why? Because on a certain level, what Yaakov Avinu is saying is, these are the children that perhaps what? I should have had myself. These are the children that perhaps, again, I should have had as well. But I didn't. And I didn't, why? Because the death of your mother left me a shattered man. After the death of your mother, I was never the same. And so how could I make up for that which I failed to do myself? Ephraim u'menashe kiruvein v'shimon yehuli. So first of all, Number one is the reason why Yaakov Avinu includes this particular piece of information about the death of Rachel Imenu is because it gives Yosef and it gives us an insight. Why are you including Menashe and Ephraim as your own sons? Right? He doesn't do that by the sons of any of the other Shvatim. So why is he including Reuven's sons as his own? Because ultimately, again, in Yaakov Avinu's eyes, the sons of Reuven are almost like, of Yosef, are the sons that Yaakov Avinu himself, he should have had. But because he was broken by his grief, he did not. But it also teaches us something else. According to the Sfarno, you know what's happening over here? It's actually quite dramatic. You know, one of the interesting things about these parshiyos, specifically Vayigash and Vayechi, after the revelation, the truth is, it's kind of a theme throughout Parashas. One of the weaknesses in the biblical families seems to be what? One of the weaknesses. Communication, right? People don't really seem to communicate, right? We see this first most dramatically with Yitzchak and Rivka, right? Yitzchak and Rivka, they've got two sons and each have opposite conceptions of their kids. Why don't they sit down and talk? Why don't they sit down and have this out? Meaning, where is the discussion, right? Rachel, even Rachel and Yaakov, she takes the trothim, the idols of Laban, and doesn't bother to tell them. There are these things that seem to kind of unfold as a result, ultimately, of lack of communication. One of the interesting things is, you know, what happens when Yosef reveals himself, and now, again, I'm Yosef, I'm here, I'm viceroy of Egypt, the Mefarshim have a whole discussion. You know, did Yaakov Avinu ever ask Yosef, by the way, what happened? Right? Where? How exactly did you get from Canaan to here? What happened over the last 22 years? And be focused on Mefarshim. Some say he never asked. Why? Because sometimes in life there are things we don't want to know, and so we'd rather not ask the questions than have to deal with painful realities. But so what's interesting over here is Yaakov Avinu is on his deathbed, and there's a topic that's painful that has never been spoken about by father and son. And that's the death of Rachel. The death of Rachel, Yosef was alone in this world. Yosef was alone because the truth is, he didn't have a mother. His father, he had a father. His father loved him very much. But he had a brother who was much younger than him. The only real familial connection he had were to other brothers who were very hostile to him. Very hostile to him. Yosef was alone. So what's amazing is, father and son, if you can imagine this, in the last moments of Yaakov Avinu's life, have an incredibly profound conversation. And they both say, you know, we're much more alike than we ever thought. Is that we've both been alone for a very long time. Yaakov Avinu says, I've been alone. You know, in life, you could be alone even if you're surrounded by people. Yaakov Avinu says, I've been alone for a very long time. I've been alone since your mother died. And the truth is, I've never been whole since. And although Yosef doesn't articulate it, but Yosef says, Father, it's funny you should say that because I've also always been alone. Since mother died, the truth is, I've felt alone also throughout my adult life. I've felt alone. I'm by story of Egypt, and yet I'm fundamentally alone. So Yaakov Avinu brings this up, and he says something amazing. He says, Yosef, I have to come clean with you. According to the Sfarno, I failed your mother. I failed her. She died, and I should have at least had the ability, the strength, to give her proper burial. I should have brought her, if not to Maras HaMachpelah, if not into Hebron, at least to Beis Lechem. Bethlehem is right there. I failed her in that I buried her in the middle of nowhere. And I'm not making excuses. I couldn't. I wasn't capable. At the moment when I experienced the grief, I could not do more. But Yosef, I'm coming clean. It's almost like a hodah. I'm admitting the fact that I failed your mother. And it's in that moment that Yaakov Avinu turns to Yosef. In that moment where he admits that he failed his wife, that he failed Yosef's mother, that he turns to Yosef and he says, Yosef, but you're even greater than me. See, when I experienced grief, I shut down. When I experienced adversity, I shut down. But you, my son Yosef, you are even greater than me. How so? Look at number 11. Remember, going forward in the story, or actually going back in the story a little bit, Yosef has two sons. His sons, Vayikra Yosef, Ef Shem HaBachar Menashe, Kina Shani Elokim Eskol HaMali Veskol Beis Savi. Yosef, we've discussed this in the past. Yosef named his firstborn son Menashe. Why? Because God has caused me to forget all of my toil and all of my suffering, all of my father's house. Ve'es Shem HaSheni Kar Ephraim, Ki Ephrani Elokim Be'eretz Anyi. And he called the second one Ephraim. Why? Because what does Ephraim mean? God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. You know what's amazing? So what's happening over here? What do these names mean? So Menashe means what? This idea of Menashe is the greatness of Yosef, is that Yosef was able to identify the painful things that were holding him back. And what did he do? What did he do? He cut himself loose from them. You know, I don't necessarily know if it's overcoming. Sometimes you can't overcome things. Sometimes you just have to let go of things. Yosef realized that there was incredible familial pain that was holding him back. So what does he decide? He decides, you know what? I'm not going to be tethered to it anymore. It's dragging me down. Kinashani, I'm going to forget about it. Now, does he ever really forget about it? No, you don't forget. What do? We compartmentalize or we suppress. So he ultimately says, I can't allow this. I can't be the victim. I can't live my life as a victim. I have to move on. So he decides to go ahead and what? He decides to let go of all of that pain of the past. And what happens? Ephraim, ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz ani. You went on to encounter newfound success, even in hostile surroundings. What Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef is, Yosef, you know why you amaze me? Because you don't submit to your circumstances. Because ultimately, again, even when you encounter adversity, you don't buckle before it, but rather you find a way to overcome. You know what comes out over here? The names Menashe and Ephraim are not just simply the names of Yosef's sons. What are they? They are expressions of Yosef's very life experience. Yaakov Avinu says to his son Yosef, when I encountered adversity, I crumbled. When I encountered adversity, ultimately, I went ahead and I could not face my challenges. When I encountered difficulties, what happened? I didn't have the energy to go on. But you, you disassociated from that which is negative. you're so fruitful even in the land of your affliction. So now something amazing happens. Yaakov Avinu now says to Yosef the following. But my dear son, I have one piece of advice for you. And what's the piece of advice? You named your sons Menashe and Ephraim. But I happen to think the right approach to life is really Ephraim and then Menashe. What does that mean? You see, Yosef, you were lucky in that you were able to disassociate from your pain. You were able to go ahead and quote-unquote forget, even though you didn't really forget, but you were able to compartmentalize and move on, and as a result, you were able to be productive. Yaakov says, if I could give you a piece of advice, I think Ephraim has to come before Menashe. What does that mean? Ephraim represents what? Ki Ephrani Elokim Be'eretz Ani, the ability to produce fruit even in hostile circumstances, which means the ability to move forward, to always keep growing, to always keep moving, no matter how compromised your life circumstances may be. There are times in life when you can't put your pain behind you. There are times in life when you can't disassociate from the negative things that are holding you back. But even in those times, what do you have to do? You have to keep moving. You have to keep growing. You have to keep producing fruit, even if you find yourself in the middle of hostile circumstances. Hopefully afterwards, you'll be able to disassociate from your pain. Hopefully afterwards, you'll be able to go ahead and what? You'll be able to forget those things that are holding you back. But don't wait to forget before moving on. Yosef, you live your life, Menashe and then Ephraim. Yaakov says, I'm giving you the advice, live life, Ephraim before Menashe. Always grow, always move, always do, always accomplish. You have to keep moving in life no matter what your circumstances may be. And hopefully at some point in time, you will be able to disassociate from your pain. So this is what the Targum Yonasan is saying. Going back, remember again, to number eight. Remember what the Targum Yonasan said? Yaakov Avinu is not blessing, is not saying that we bless our children to be like Menashe and Ephraim. Who are we blessing our children to be like? We're blessing our children to be like Yosef. But how do you become a Yosef? What is a Yosef? A Yosef is a person who is able to live life with the ideals of Ephraim and Menashe. A Yosef is the kind of person who's able to keep moving, to keep growing, to keep doing, no matter how difficult circumstances may be. A Yosef is a person who is able over time to disassociate and sometimes just even forget to untangle myself from the things that are holding me back. That was the bracha. That's what Targum Yonasan is saying. Yaakov Avinu says to his son, my son, you are greater than me. Because when your mother died and I faced adversity, I buckled. I simply wasn't able to go on. In fact, again, I wasn't able to go on. That's why, again, in number two, that's why he brings in the death of Rachel Imenu. Because Yaakov Avinu was a traumatic event in life. And how did Yaakov Avinu deal with trauma? How did he deal with it? He didn't. He didn't deal with it. He shut down. And Yaakov says to Yosef, you're amazing. Because you know how to deal with trauma. You know what to do in adverse circumstances. You don't shut down. What do? You forget and then you move on. You detach, you let go of the negative baggage, and you continue to produce. My son, the only thing I would suggest is that what? Perhaps reverse the order, and you should always produce even before you can detach. So Yosef, you Yosef, become the paradigm for future blessings. We don't bless our children, says the Targum Yonasan, to be like Menashe and Ephraim, because the truth is, we don't know anything about Menashe and Ephraim. But we do bless our children to be like Yosef. And what it means to be a Yosef is to be the kind of person that captures and contains and ultimately embodies these ideals of Ephraim and Menashe. To be a person who could move, grow, produce fruit, even in hostile circumstances, and to be the kind of person who's able to disassociate, disentangle, and let go of the things that are holding me back. And I think what comes out over here is that something very dramatic changed within Yaakov Avinu. If you look at number 12, so the Torah says, this is in last week's parasha. This is talking about after Yaakov just heard that Yosef is still alive. So what does he do? He gets the entire family together and takes everybody down to Egypt. So the Torah says, Vayisa Yisrael v'chol ha'shelo v'yovo be'er ha'sheva. And he stops in Be'er Sheva. Vayizbach zvochim l'elokei aviv Yitzchok. And what does he do? He goes ahead and he offers karbanos to the God of his father Yitzchok. So all the mafarshim wonder, Why is he offering karbanos to the Lord of his father Yitzchak? What about Avraham? What's the pshat? So there are many different interpretations. If you look at number 13, I've quoted to you over here from a sefer called Siduro Shel Shabbos, which was written by Rav Chaim Shlomo of Chernowitz. See, he says the following. He says, I'll just tell you this outside. He says that, actually, let me read it to you inside. He says the following. V'yesh lomar, v'hine ha-din l'fi chazal, chayiv adam levarich al ro'a kishim shem avarich al ha-tova. The Mishnah Masechet Bracha says that a person is obligated literally to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bless God for the negative things, the same way that I bless God for the positive things. So the Rebbe writes, V'yesh shnei sugei hodos. There are two ways you could give thanks. Aleph, kishyesh lo tzara v'nitzal mimena modela Hashem ha-shnitzal. Aval yosher tov haya lo haya kori klal ha-mikra ha-masiv. Ki b'chol ofen haya lo tzara mimenu. Beis o'a v'yesh in a magishtot. Listen to this. Let me tell you this part outside. There are two ways you can give thanks to God for suffering. You can say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? And now I've undergone the suffering and I'm okay. So I thank God for letting me get through it okay. But there's still a nagging thought in my mind, which is, why did you put me here to begin with? Right? Meaning, very nice that you got me through the challenge, but I have a better idea, God, right? I have a better idea. Don't put me here in the first place and we'll call it even. All right, let's do that. So I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for getting me through it. But I can't help but wonder, but you're God, and if you got me through it, but you also put me in it to begin with. The second approach, says the Rebbe, is a person ultimately who recognizes the incredible redemptive power of the struggle. That a person realizes that there are certain things in life that only come about because we struggle, because we suffer. The result is only a certain way because it was achieved through incredible labor and through incredible difficulty. You know, it's amazing over here. If you look at number four, so the Rebbe says, so what happened? So Yaakov Avinu, for all of those years that Yosef was gone, and really now it's all the years that Rachel was gone, he never accepted the suffering. He never understood why God was putting him in this situation. But what happens now? Now he's been making his way down to Egypt. And which God does he connect to? He connects to the God of Yitzchak. Now Yitzchak represents what? Midas Hadin, the divine attribute of strict justice. What does it mean, says the Rebbe, that Yaakov Avinu offered up offerings to the God of Yitzchak? That Yaakov Avinu accepted that there was something positive that came from strict justice. Not that everything's okay now, but why did you make me suffer? Yaakov Avinu understood that the suffering itself was essential, that the suffering itself was cathartic, that the suffering itself was redemptive. He was never able to accept this before, but now he finally accepts it. In fact, if you look at 14, I'm sorry. The Torah says, when Yosef first goes missing, and Yaakov thinks he's dead, so the Torah says, Vayima'ein lehisnachim. He refused to be consoled. Why does a person refuse to be consoled? Because they don't believe that there is anything positive that can come out of their circumstances. They do not believe that in any way there's any positivity that could emerge from these tumultuous. Yosef's dead. Rachel's dead. What silver lining is there? What possible positivity could emerge from this? There's nothing. And therefore, there is no consolation. But as the story unfolds, or really as the dramatic conclusion unfolds, and he sees that Yosef was in Egypt, and the only reason Yosef rose to his position of power was why? Because he was sold. And it had to be that Yaakov thought he was dead, because otherwise he would seek him out. And if he would look for him, then ultimately he'd bring him back to Canaan. And Yaakovino finally realizes, my gosh, there was something positive in the suffering. It's not just thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for giving the story a happy ending, but to a certain end, these are very hard words to say, thank you for the process. Thank you for the process. Thank you for the pain. Thank you for, not thank you, may I have some more, but thank you for the tumultuous circumstances, because it's only as a result of them that we have this particular result. And in fact, if you look at number 15, now with this really will conclude. Well, actually, no, not yet. So look at number 15. This is Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cohen Cook, who's the son of Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook, has essays on the parasha, and he says something amazing. He says, you know, the lashon, the wording of the pasuk, is that Yaakov Avinu was sikel es yadav. When he blessed Ephraim and Manasseh, literally, he mixed up his hands. Now, there are so many different ways you could have said that he switched his hands. Sikel is so interesting. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda makes an amazing observation. He says, Seder Mesiras Habrachos Misubach. Rav Tzvi Yehuda writes, you know what? Sometimes blessing in life is very mixed up and very complicated. What Yaakov Avinu was, you see, what Yaakov Avinu was telling his son Yosef is, Yosef, you learned a lesson much earlier in life that I'm only learning now for the first time. Well, Yaakov Avinu, because remember, why does he switch his hands? Why doesn't he just do what? Switch the kids, right? I mean, let's keep this easy. Just switch them around. Why do you have to switch your hands? Rav Tzvi Yehuda was saying that Yaakov Avinu was conveying a dramatic message. Bracha in life is often not straightforward, right? Mazel in life is often not straightforward, and happy endings are often preceded by many tumultuous chapters. Brachos is often not like this, but bracha is like this. It's misubach, it's complicated, it's mixed up. Yaakov Avinu says, you know, I wish I would have learned this lesson earlier on. Perhaps I would have dealt with Rachel's death differently. Perhaps I would have dealt with Yosef's quote-unquote death differently. And Yaakov Avinu says to his beloved Yosef, herein lies your greatness. Here is where you have clearly, even at your young age, eclipsed me. Because I was never able to see the good in the suffering. I was never able to detach myself from negative circumstances. I was never able to go ahead and work. I was never able to create fruit, to create positive life results in the midst of hostile life circumstances. But you, Yosef, you're an Ephraim and you're a Menashe. You're a doer. You're an accomplisher. You're someone who accomplishes great things even in the midst of adverse circumstances. And you're the person who is able to detach yourself from all negative baggage. And in fact, with this we'll conclude. Look at number 16. The Targum Yonason says, when do we give this bracha to our children? U'barchinon b'yom ahul l'meymar, b'cha Yosef b'rei, yivarchun b'es Yisrael yes yinuka, b'yoma d'mahalusa. When do we give our children this blessing? On the day of the bris. L'meymar, yishvina Hashem ke'efrayim ulchem Menashe. The bracha we ultimately give to our children is that you should be in Ephraim and Manasseh. So what comes out, if we, amazingly, if we give this bracha to a little boy, yes, okay, our custom is we do it on Shabbos also, but the major time, says the Tanya Yonasan, to give this bracha is when a little boy is just beginning his life, is when the young man is just beginning his time in this world. We give him the bracha that not that you should be in Ephraim and Manasseh. Who should you be? You should be a Yosef. So what comes out is, we emerge with three major understandings of this bracha that we recite to this very day. We saw approach the moment, which was the Rebbe of Dinov, that really the bracha we're conveying to our children. And remember, you know, I'm not going to do it inside, but outside, in number 17, Rav Sarotsky again points out that, you know, if you want to convey bracha to your children, what's the most important bracha that you convey to your children? The most important bracha we give our children is us. Right? If I want my child to be something or to do something, the best way to ensure that they become that is not to shuckle or not to close your eyes when you give the bracha, but it's to be the paradigm of what it is that you want them to become. You want your child to embody certain values? Wonderful. Embody those values yourself and your child will learn from your example. So what comes out is something amazing. According to the Rebbe of Dinov, the bracha we give our children, and ultimately, again, remember, this is not just about children. We're talking about what model are we supposed to aspire to in life. So the Rebbe of Dinov says, we tell our children, be ba'ale midos tovos, be menshin, be proper, be good to each other. And even if someone else has more than you, be happy for them. If you have more than another, don't use it to lord over them, but ultimately use it to do good for them. We teach our children that what we aspire to be as individuals, Ephraim and Menashe, to be mentioned, to be people who are able to interact with others. Second approach, Rav Sarotsky, we give our children the blessing that what? That they should always have pride in who they are. We should have pride in affiliating as members of Am Yisrael. We should not try to cast off that identity to blend in. We should not try to cast off that identity because it's difficult. Yes, being a Jew certainly has many challenges, but it has many more privileges. Yisim chalkim kefayim chem inasha, that we should always find pride in our peoplehood, just as the sons of Yosef did. And finally, number three, ultimately, we're not blessing our children to be like Menashe and Ephraim. We are instead blessing our children to be like Yosef. Ephraim and Menashe ultimately means we want our children to be like Yosef. Who is Yosef? Yosef was an individual who was always Kiefrani Elokim Be'eretz Ani. He always produced fruit, even in adverse circumstances. And he was a man who mastered the ability to detach and untangle himself from those very things that are holding him back. So we bless our children and we bless ourselves, is that we should ultimately aspire to be like Yosef. We all encounter difficult circumstances, but we shouldn't, like Yaakov Avinu laments himself, shut down. Instead, what we should realize is, as difficult as it sounds, there is bracha, there is blessing, even in the most adverse circumstances. Sometimes you just have to wait a long time to see what the bracha is. But we bless our children and we bless ourselves each and every week, each and every Shabbos, the day of the Bris Milah, that we should find the inner koach of a Yosef. We should find the koach ultimately to be able to produce great things, to be able to move, to be able to grow, to be able to do, even in the most difficult circumstances. And we should find the koach to let go of those things that are holding us back. Let's stop over here. I'm sorry. Say to our son, but what's interesting over here is it appears, you know,